3 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Dave DeForest reporting. A Syrian military spokesman says the government army has recaptured the town of Palmyra from Islamic State militants. He says the government is now in control of the whole city. Media reports say one of the suspects in the killing of the estranged half-brother of North Korea's leader has been released from a detention center and driven away in a convoy. It is believed that he will be deported. 45-year-old Ri Jong-chol had been in custody for nearly 2 weeks following the February 13th attack on Kim Jong-nam at an airport in Kuala Lumpur. Malaysia's attorney general said that Ri would be released because there is not enough evidence against him. U.S. President Donald Trump Thursday visited a Virginia shipyard to tour the most expensive warship ever built, a high-profile event showcasing his pledge this week to dramatically boost U.S. military spending.
This is American craftsmanship at its biggest, at its best, at its finest. American workers are the greatest anywhere in the world.
The president spoke in Newport News, Virginia, aboard the $13 billion USS Gerald R. Ford. The carrier shifts from steam to electrical power and will be equipped with the latest weaponry, communications, and operating systems. It is expected to be commissioned later this year. Federal law enforcement agents have searched three facilities of the American heavy equipment manufacturer Caterpillar Incorporated in the U.S. Midwest. Caterpillar says it is cooperating with law enforcement and that the search was part of an Internal Revenue Service investigation into profits the company earned by a Switzerland-based parts subsidiary. This is VOA News. U.S. Attorney General Jeff Sessions told reporters Thursday that he did not lie when he testified during his confirmation hearing that he had no interaction with Russian officials during the presidential campaign. He drew a distinction between that and two conversations he had with the Russian ambassador, which he says was only in his capacity as a senator. Sessions says he accepts recent calls for him to recuse himself from a federal investigation into alleged Russian interference in the election.
I believe those recommendations are right and just. Therefore, I have recused myself in the matters that deal with the Trump campaign.
President Donald Trump says he has total confidence in Sessions. His office is reporting that Vice President Mike Pence used a private email account to conduct public business when he was governor of Indiana. The report, which first appeared in the Indianapolis Star newspaper, said the business included sensitive homeland security matters. The European Union Thursday asked Macedonian President Georgi Ivanov to reverse his decision to block the formation of a coalition with ethnic Albanian parties. EU's Foreign Affairs Chief Federica Mogherini met with Macedonian officials Thursday and called for a toning down of rhetoric for fear of sparking ethnic conflict.
So I asked the president to reflect on the way forward, to reverse his decision in the interest of all citizens in this country, and as the Constitution says, I quote, entrust the mandate to a candidate belonging to the parties which have a majority in the assembly. This is the constitution of this country, and we expect the constitution to be respected.
The president is refusing to give his backing to the coalition, saying that its pledge to allow wider use of the Albanian language amounts to foreign interference. The U.S. Labor Department said Thursday requests for unemployment benefits in the U.S. fell to a 44-year low last week. The figures indicate a tightening in the labor market. A ruling Thursday by Egypt's top appeals court effectively acquits former President Hosni Mubarak of charges of killing protesters during a 2011 uprising. The Court of Cassation rejected an appeal by prosecutors allowing an earlier acquittal verdict to stand. The court also rejected a civil petition by families of the victims for compensation. The 2011 uprising resulted in Mubarak's removal from office. He is now technically free to leave a hospital where he has been under house arrest. Pakistan is taking steps to bring its remote northwestern tribal areas under the mainstream judicial and political system. It's a 5-year plan, and it will make that region equal to the rest of the nation for the first time since 1947. I'm Dave DeForest.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Barty in Washington. Today is Friday, March 3rd, and here are some of the stories we are covering. A Malawian opposition parliamentarian is calling for a mind revolution to fight what he calls endemic corruption in the country.
We are failing to make any progress because it has become endemic. It's like it's been accepted. It's a way of life, and we are tired of it, and we want to put a stop to it.
Lazaro Chakwera is an opposition leader in Malawi's parliament. South Sudan President Salva Kiir declares March 10th a national day of prayer, but a Catholic bishop says he will not attend. We'll examine the issue of women drug addicts in West Africa, and Swaziland's parliament rejects a $1.7 billion budget, saying it failed to respond to the needs of the people.
Each year, budget has not been people-driven. So to say, this time we see a bit of change from the MPs who are calling for a people's budget.
Mpalana Shwangwe is the Deputy General Secretary of Swaziland Band Pudemo Party. And today is World Wildlife Day, with hope and tragedy in the fight against ivory trade. Those stories, plus Samson O'Malley's sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. The opposition leader in Malawi's parliament says the country needs a mind revolution to say no once and for all to corruption. Lazaro Chakwera says endemic corruption is stifling the country's development progress. In the most recent case of official corruption, President Peter Mutharika fired Agriculture Minister George Chaponda after the minister was implicated in the so-called maize gate scandal, in which the minister allegedly purchased maize from a private company in Zambia at an inflated price. Chakwera accused President Mutharika of handling corruption matters with what he called kid gloves. He threatened recently to lead mass protests against official corruption.
You know, a recent study by Transparency International indicated that our perception index has worsened, and it is really, really serious. We are failing to make any progress because it has become endemic. It's like it's been accepted. It's a way of life, and we are tired of it, and we want to put a stop to it.
Recently in the news was this maize gate. Is that the only thing, or you have any other evidence of this, the prevalence of corruption?
The recent revelations about the maize gate are just an indication of something that's been going on or is going on in other fields. In fact, when I made that statement, I had cited 13 other cases that are somewhat corruption-related and allegations being made, and these things need to be followed up. And so I was asking the president to do something, say something, act in some way, or we would truly just protest.
Has anything happened since you made the threat?
He has not said anything, but some people naming themselves civil society organizations that we hardly knew about have come out to say stuff that is not even in response to the issues I raised, but were talking about myself and what kind of person I am and stuff like that. And I'm saying I am inviting everyone to even probe me. This is not the issue.
Yes, so the Civil Society Forum you mentioned, they are threatening that you should be also investigated. Apparently, maybe they just want to find out if you are also corrupt.
Exactly. But Malawians will recall that even before the elections, I was the first to declare my assets. And then after the election, I did the same. Last year, I did the same. And I have nothing to hide. In fact, when I made the statement, I said I'm inviting the Anti-Corruption Bureau to investigate me as well. I just want to have this country run on a clean slate.
The Minister of Information, Dawusi, has taken you to task also on the threat you made. Any response?
Well, he doesn't talk substantive issues, and so I don't respond to just statements.
Why do you think? Because corruption keeps coming up in Malawi. What needs to be done?
This is the problem, and I'm saying we need to draw a line and say enough is enough. We need to make sure that everyone connected, whether they be in the public service or they be politicians or whoever it is, we must all rise up and say we deserve better. We need a mind revolution.
A mind revolution?
Yes, sir.
What exactly do you mean?
A mindset that says we are not putting up with this. A mindset that says this is not a way of life. We deserve better. And change that thinking with action.
Lazaro Chakwera is opposition leader in Malawi's parliament. He was speaking with me from the capital, Lilongwe. Swazi parliamentarians have asked their government to resubmit a revised people-driven national budget today, Friday. This after parliament, in an unprecedented move, rejected the $1.7 billion budget, saying it failed to respond to the needs of the people. Civil society and banned opposition groups welcomed the rejection, saying it appears the lawmakers are finally listening to the wishes and aspirations of Swazis for the first time in the country's history. Umpalana Shwangwe, Deputy General Secretary of Swaziland's banned opposition Pudemo Party, says his party is concerned that King Mswati III could still pressure parliament to approve the rejected budget.
Each year, budget has not been people-driven, so to say. This time, we see a bit of change from the MPs who are calling for a people's budget. That one on its own, we applaud it, so to say. But we still have to see if the MPs, they can sustain that call, which to us as a political formation, we have our doubts if they will stand the pressure or if that motion to reject the budget will be sustained.
Although this is unprecedented, some Swazis I spoke with say that the call for a revised budget to be tabled on Friday, you know, which will address the needs of the people, including potable clean water, feeder road networks, increase of community project budget, an increase in elderly and people living with disability grants, among other things, it's a welcome development. How are Swazis reacting to this new move by members of parliament?
Swazis are a bit excited about this call because they've always been calling for this attention of the elderly roads and other things. This is what we, the opposition, this is what we basically we've been calling for. So to us, really, it is a plus because it means those people who are in parliament have eventually heard what the people on the ground are saying. But that excitement might be short-lived. I don't see any way how they can revise this budget. For instance, I don't see the call to increase the elderly grants.
I understand your skepticism. However, wouldn't this be considered as a sign of good things to come in terms of parliamentarians looking out for the ordinary man or improving the living conditions of Swazis, of which you and other banned political formations have been advocating?
It is a positive direction, but the biggest question that remains to be answered is, can they succeed? Can they sway the budget to what they think? Because what they are saying is they don't want a new figure, but they only want relocation of the monies. For instance, the issue of Christianity. The government has just abolished other religions to be taught in school. Instead, they are promoting Christianity. And everybody on the streets, we don't see why would they fork out about 20 million to cater for Christianity. And the only reason we have is that they want to misuse that money. So basically, it is a beginning of a bright future. To us, this is yet another proof that system of government can no longer use the one-party system kind of government. Because, for instance, the issue of rejecting the budget is the first of its kind. So definitely we are looking forward into probably new things to come. But I doubt if they will ever come without any pressure on the ground.
Mpalana Shangwe is the Deputy General Secretary of Swaziland's banned Pudemo Party. He spoke with viewers Peter Clotty from the country's commercial capital, Mazini. You're listening to Daybreak Africa on The Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Today is Friday, March 3rd. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. We send shout-out to listeners on all our VOA affiliate stations around Africa. Daybreak Africa time is 15 minutes past the hour. South Sudan President Salva Kiir has declared March 10th a national day of prayer for peace and forgiveness ahead of a national dialogue which the president announced late last year. Some citizens welcomed the declaration, as we hear from Wake Simon Wudu in Juba.
In a recorded statement sent to media outlets, President Kiir urged citizens to turn out in large numbers on March 10th to pray for the country, to repent and to forgive each other.
Our time as people who aspire for the common destiny is now ripe to turn to God and ask Him for forgiveness and blessings. We have not been that perfect, and we need to submit ourselves to the Almighty through prayers.
The National Day of Prayer is an American tradition when people of all faiths pray for their nation. U.S. law requires that the president proclaim a National Day of Prayer each year on the first Thursday in May. President Kiir says the National Day prayer in South Sudan will be observed in all states' capitals as a preparation for the start of the national dialogue in March. 24-year-old Apio Kevin Olango of Juba embraces a National Day of Prayer.
We have been going through untold suffering, and it is time we should open up all our avenues for our citizens to dialogue and pray together. In the same spirit, we would wish to ask our diaspora community to pray with us on this day so that we turn over our plight to Almighty God for the better year 2017.
Another South Sudanese youth who prefers to be identified only as James says while he appreciates a National Prayer Day, more must be done to fix the country's problems.
We need to also embark on doing the exact thing that we are supposed to do. I mean, tackling issues to do on the dialogue, meeting the target groups so that we can finally realize peace.
President Kiir has yet to announce the start date of the national dialogue. In February, he announced the dialogue would begin sometime in early March. Wake Simon Wudu, VOA News, Juba.
A Catholic bishop in South Sudan says he will not attend the National Day of Prayers announced by President Salva Kiir. The auxiliary bishop of Juba, Right Reverend Santo Laku, says the proposed national prayer next week is intended to what he calls blindfold the international community. Bishop Laku tells reporter John Tanza that President Kiir must first stop his soldiers from killing civilians before organizing any spiritual gathering.
It is a political prayer to blindfold the international community of the atrocities the government has committed against the people of South Sudan. And I think and I believe that some church leaders surely will attend, but some definitely will not.
But is the Catholic Church going to attend these prayers?
Well, I, in person, have no proper idea. But maybe my archbishop, if he's well, he might attend. I did not talk to him yet. I don't know.
You have been quite vocal about the situation in South Sudan. So you have been calling the leaders to repent, and President Kiir is just calling for that. Is that a problem?
You know, with repentance, there is need for honesty. He has not admitted the atrocities committed by he himself, ordering the killing and the death of so many civilians. And practically, communities are punished collectively for small things. Villages are burned. I think he's just covering up. He's covering up so many other things. And practically, it is all politics, John.
President Kiir announced that there is going to be a national dialogue in South Sudan in March, and he said before the national dialogue starts, people should forgive each other and open a new page. What is your reaction to that?
Practically, this national dialogue is a mockery. I spoke about it openly. It is a mockery on the death of so many South Sudanese. It's a mockery on the suffering of our people in the camps, in Uganda, in Kenya, in Ethiopia, in Sudan, in the DRC, and in Central Africa, and in the UN camps. It's a great mockery, and I think it seems the international community is blindfolded by these statements. There are a lot of killings. People are not in their villages. The Mali of Eastern Equatoria are not in their villages. The Acholi are not in their villages. The Lamu are not in their villages. The Kuku and the Kakwa and the Kojula are not in their villages. The Sholo people of Malakal are not in their villages. They've been driven away by President Salva Kiir and his group. And practically the people carrying arms, there should be peace first and discipline return, and then we can seek for national dialogue.
Are you going to attend the prayers on March 10th?
I have been praying for South Sudan every day. This morning, in my prayers in the morning, I pray for South Sudan. That prayer called by Salva Kiir, I will never and never understand unless they carry me as a corpse. But I will never attend that prayer. It is a political prayer.
That's right, Reverend Santo Laku, the auxiliary bishop of the Catholic Diocese of Juba, South Sudan. He was speaking with John Tanza of VOA South Sudan in Focus program. The International Narcotics Control Board released its annual report this week with a focus on how female drug addicts are not as likely to receive treatment as male addicts. Pierre Lapeque, the head of the United Nations Office of Drug and Crimes West and Central Africa Unit, talks to Ricky Stryak about some of the specific issues plaguing the region, such as what he says is a dramatic rise in the production and consumption of crystal meth.
They have done a global assessment. They saw that that girls and females are basically one-third of the drug addicts worldwide. And they represent only one-fifth of the people who access to treatment. Avoid the stigmatization of females. Females generally are more discreet than males, so they have problem to knock at the door of a treatment center. Some things which are obviously specific to females, pregnancy. When you are a female addict and you become pregnant, how you deal with that? How you make sure that at the same time you have this pluridisciplinary approach to make sure that you treat the addiction, but you make sure that you save the lady and you save the baby also. What we must avoid above all when we are talking about drug addiction is to avoid stigmatization.
As far as the West and Central Africa region goes, especially when you speak about women addicts, I think there's probably a big social stigma for a woman to admit she's an addict more so than a man. Is there any specific information in this new report about this region that you found surprising?
No, not on the gender issue. The main issue is that in the region, we see it's very difficult to get data. That's the main issue in the region. Because the governments do not have solid, reliable data of what's happening as far as demand is concerned and as far as and supply is concerned. Because you definitely need both. So when you do not have reliable data, it's very difficult to define policies which are actually fully in line with the needs of the country or the region. So in the region, what we know for certain is that basically all kind of drugs, all of them, historically, let's say 30 years ago, it was just about cannabis. Okay? Now it's still cannabis, of course, which is grown, trafficked, and consumed in the region. But you also have new drugs which appear, let's say, about cocaine, which appear, now you have the crack cocaine, okay, and you have heroin, which was not a problem here in the region, but we see more and more drug injectors in the region. And so those two drugs, cocaine and heroin, are only, if I may say so, trafficked within the region. But what we see more and more is that amphetamine-type stimulant drug, crystal methamphetamine, is now produced heavily in the region. It's trafficked and it's consumed in the region.
Since when? How new is that?
About crystal meth, I would say the first lab which has been discovered in the region was in Guinea-Conakry in 2009. Since then, we have seen a lot of labs in Nigeria.
Peter Lepeg, the head of the United Nations Office of Drug and Crimes West and Central Africa Unit, he was speaking to Ricky Stryak from Dakar. Today, Friday, marks UN World Wildlife Day, which aims to celebrate and raise awareness of the world's wild animals and plants. As Henry Ritual reports, each year, more species are added to the endangered list, while campaigners warn drastic action is needed to save many from extinction.
This year's World Wildlife Day theme is Listen to the Young Voices, but many campaigners warn future generations may never see many of the species around today because many are on the brink of extinction, mostly due to human activity. That includes the hidden wildlife beneath the oceans, at increasing risk from the huge amount of plastics filling our seas, from microbeads in cosmetics to industrial-scale waste. Louisa Casson is from Greenpeace.
12 million tons of plastic is entering the oceans every year, which is about a rubbish truck's worth of plastics every single minute. Plastic is entering every single level of the ocean food chain, and marine creatures from zooplankton up to blue whales are choking on plastics, they're ingesting it, and they're getting tangled up in it.
Around the world, the United Nations warns human activity is depleting biodiversity. In many parts of Africa, elephants and rhinos are under huge pressure from poachers. China, the world's biggest ivory market, announced a ban in December on all ivory trade to take force by the end of 2017, hailed as a game-changer by conservationists. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
It's time now for Daybreak Africa's posting. Here is Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. Good morning to you, Samson.
Good morning to you, James. We begin with the visit to Nigeria of Ahmed Ahmed, head of the Madagascar FA and the main challenger to the current Confederation of African Football president, Issa Hayatou, ahead of CAF elections scheduled for Thursday, March 16th. Ahmed Ahmed insisted he can bring widespread, meaningful change to African football if he unseats Issa Hayatou as president of the Confederation of African Football.
Some of my colleagues in the football want to change. We are a group, we discuss together, I listen, and I answer for this needed. They need someone to stand, I accept to stand. I give an opportunity for people who want to change this, my position. And the first time in our confederation, one candidate have a manifesto.
Ahmed Ahmed, who met with Nigeria Sports Minister Solomon Dalong, President of the Nigerian Senate Bukola Saraki, and other football officials on Thursday, said African football cannot afford to continue with Asian principles without the required reforms.
Executive Committee keep much power of juridictional or jurisdictional. But the right thing is matter of disciplinary is for jurisdictional, not for executive committee. That's the change we need to do.
Now to Zambia, where the young Teranga Lions of Senegal came from a 2-goal deficit in the first half to claim a 4-3 victory over the Amajita of South Africa in the ongoing 2017 Africa Under 20 Nations Cup, throwing Group B wide open. The Teranga Lions go top of the log on 4 points, while South Africa and Cameroon are tied in the second place on 3 points. Cameroon picked up their first win after thrashing Sudan 4-1 in their second Group B tie at the Levi Mwanawasa Stadium in Ondola on Thursday. The three teams, as well as bottom place Sudan, can all still qualify for the semifinals ahead of the final round of matches this coming weekend. On Saturday, Zambia and Egypt will square up against each other, while Guinea will face Mali. All the matches will be played simultaneously. And then on Sunday, it will be Sudan versus South Africa and Senegal versus Cameroon. That's it for Daybreak Africa Sports. I am Samson Omale in Abuja, Nigeria. It's back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Samson. Have a good weekend. We look forward to your report again on Monday morning. And that's it for this Friday, March 3rd edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for spending this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, producer Nicole Beckford, reporters Peter Clotty and Ricky Stralak, as well as sports editor Samson O'Malley, along with our engineer John Ellison, I'm James Barton, Washington, wishing you a very good weekend.